When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
Hello. I'm so glad you could join us. I hope you brought your blanket to hide under. The spooky crew is going to discuss things and events from other realms. Ghosts, cryptids, aliens. Be sure to hold your blanket extra tight as the boys take you deep into the Fearscape.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Fearscape. Man, Fearscape is here, yep. Baby. We are here, and it is 2020.
Yeah.
It's 2020. Barbara Walters said this is 2020, and she was right.
She is.
She's a psychic. But no, we're so thankful you guys are still tuning in. We've got a really cool story for you guys today. We're going to be talking about the documentary that is making waves all around the paranormal community right now. Hellier. It's actually in its second season.
Yep.
So it was already making waves, but this second season has just...
Blown it out of the water.
I am obsessed with this. Like, a fat kid loves cake, and I'm a fat kid, and I love cake. So I know. But we're going to get into that. But, you know, we wanted to once again say thank you to 100.9 WCHQ-FM. They closed their doors on December 31st. Rest in peace, guys. Thank you so much for 10 great years of radio, of local music in the Louisville, Kentucky area.
Shout out.
Housing us for a year there. We are so pumped, but we still are going on. The podcast continues.
The journey continues.
But anyways, if you didn't know, my name is Stefan, and I am joined, as always, by my lumpishly looking co-host.
I'm not really sure that's a good adjective. Yeah, thanks. Lumpishly.
Lumpishly looking.
That reminds me of the that president of the United States of America.
Yes,
that song,
lump.
You know,
lump. Yeah, well, that's you. Josh Rutledge, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
So like I said, we're going to be talking about Hellier today. I got Josh hooked on this. We're getting everybody and their mother hooked on this like crack.
It's like a journey. You just have to take everybody on a journey.
Absolutely. But before we get into that, we both have some spooky news to get rolling. So let's get into that. All right, Josh, I'll let you go first. What kind of spooky news you got for us today?
Yeah, so this comes from CNN on the travel section. I don't know why it's on the travel section. But
what do we do with it?
So the title of the article is Meet the Scientist Trying to Travel Back in Time.
Oh, yeah, Doc Brown.
So it says, you know, the past, it has been said, is a foreign country, and sometimes it's another country we yearn to visit. We can't, of course, whereas actual travel is limited only by how much cash we can spare, visa requirements, and flight cancellations, journey into times gone by is limited by the cold, hard laws of physics. However, this guy, not Doc Brown from Back to the Future,
damn it,
but a few real-life scientists currently trying to realize the dream of turning back the clock to travel to the ultimate destination.
They're going back in time. Also trademarked.
Shout out to Huey Lewis in the news.
Yep.
Among them is Ron Mallett. a astrophysicist who has dedicated much of his adult life to the notion that time travel is possible. He's come up with the scientific equations and principles upon which he says a time machine could be created. While acknowledging that his theories and designs are unlikely to allow time travel in his lifetime, for years he's been working in parallel to a respected academic career to fulfill his dream of venturing back in time to see his beloved father again.
There's always some sort of sweet reason.
So, you know, he goes into a little bit of backstory, you know, about his father, his TV repairman. He instilled in his son, you know, reading, encouraged him to budding passion for science. And basically just says now he's looking for funding. So if anybody would like to donate money to Mr. Ron Mallett, he's at UConn. Nice, prodigious school there. But yeah, so this comes to us from CNN.
Speaking of UConn, that's gold. You can go back in time, get gold. That's what they did in one of those movies.
Yeah, that's,
Time Cop, maybe. I don't remember.
I think it's spelled differently.
Oh, so it's not like UConn Cornelius?
That might even spell differently still.
I will say this. I am not a scientist, but my God, do I believe in time travel. Though I think it's going to be nothing like we think. You know, one of my biggest issues I have with time travel is, does our body move when we travel back in time? Because not only does our world spin, but it spins around something else. So, like, I've always been afraid that if we went back in time, would we be in the spot we're at right now? Yeah. And then we're just in the middle of space, and we're like, uh-oh! Yeah.
Well, it's the, there's a lot of movies that talk about 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
There's a show on Netflix that talks about, you know, just basically projecting your consciousness back in time as opposed to your actual being.
And I'd much rather do that. I mean, I know some people want to go back in time to change things, right? I don't want to. I've seen too much Doctor Who. I've seen too much everything.
Butterfly effect.
Yeah, I've seen all that. But I would love to go back.
Just experience
and experience that. And one of the topics, and I think I mentioned this a show or two ago, one of the topics that I have is the Vatican supposedly has a TV that's able to look into the future and look into the past.
Huh.
That a priest created. I think it's called, like, Chronovision. Hmm. But I would definitely love to take a dive into that.
Not Activision.
Not Activision. Sorry, Atari people. It's not Activision.
Or Univision.
Or it's definitely not Univision. So my story comes from the Denver Post. We got two spooky newses. This one is spooky in a government kind of way. So it says, weird and concerning, mystery drone sightings continue in Colorado into Nebraska. And this actually came from some of our fans. I actually had a few people send this story to me because it was showing up. But it says authorities in Lincoln, Washington, and Sedgwick County say they, too, are stumped by clusters of aircraft. Mysterious drone sightings have been reported in three more rural counties in the northeast corner of Colorado and at least one county in Nebraska, as local law enforcement officials and residents remain clueless as to what's flying above them at night. The sheriffs of Lincoln, Washington, and Sedgwick counties told the Denver Post on Friday that their offices have been getting calls this week about the unknown winged devices days after initial reports out of Phillips and Yuma counties caused a national stir. Now, here's what's interesting about these, Josh. Local and national authorities say they have no idea who is operating groups of very large drones reported to have 6-foot-long wingspans and spend the nighttime hours flying in grid-like patterns. While the powers that be have no answers, the mystery aircraft have inspired a wide range of theories online. Some people say it must be the work of Mexican drug cartel. One commenter on the Post website said it's obviously aliens from a far-off galaxy. Perhaps it's the History Channel looking for lost cities or ranchers trying to track their cows, other theorized. But thus far, all anyone can do is guess. Sedgwick County Sheriff Carlton Britton said residents have been calling his office consistently since December 17th, reporting 6 to 10 drones at a time. The calls mirror those that happened in Phillips County. The clusters of drones hover or cruise through the area between 7 and 10 p.m., flying several hundred feet in the air. They've also said that, and this even comes from the sheriff who's seen them, that lights of an unknown color flicker from above. And we've heard that before.
Yeah.
That the lights were a color that they couldn't understand.
Yep.
And yeah, the sheriff says there's a lot of conspiracy theories floating around in Sedgwick County right now. They've been batting ideas around with the other county sheriffs, trying to determine if any laws are being broken, because as it stands right now, it's all above the board, even if it's a bit disconcerting. And it just goes on. They're kind of making some jokes, but they say that it is very weird and very concerning because they'd really like to know what's going on. So even the sheriffs, man, they're following him around trying to.
So a couple things that I'm surprised haven't happened yet. No one shot at one yet.
Right. Right. I was just listening to our last week's episode. Why does somebody shoot at a UFO? Right.
The other thing is I was reading through some of the comments on the website for the article. Mm-hmm. And somebody was on there talking about they own like 10 or 15 different drones. And the level of drone that is described in the article would be like several, like $10,000 to $15,000 per drone.
Wow.
So the likelihood that a rural resident has 30 of these things that they're flying around.
Well, you see, you know, Danny down the street, he was just a conspiracy nut, man. When he died, I don't know what happened, but he left me all his guns and he set his treasure trove in his basement. And I saw all these drones and thought, boy, I could keep an eye on my cows real good. Essentially what that is.
But you know what else is really big in Denver is the Air Force Academy.
Mm. Yeah. Yep. I mean, that. There's definitely military bases everywhere. I mean, I don't know. That's why I said I don't definitely know if it's spooky in terms of aliens or anything like that, but definitely spooky that.
Definitely weird, though, that like local law enforcement doesn't. You would think if it's the Air Force doing it, they would reach out and say, hey, we're going to do some test flights at night just
and
in case.
I mean, it's crossing state lines.
Right.
You know, that's the other side of it. It's crossing state lines.
County
and
lines.
It crossed into Nebraska, too.
Oh, okay.
There's one county in Nebraska that got hit. And so it's like it's crossing state lines, which is already kind of a weird thing. And there's a fleet of them. It's not like it's just one, you know, it's a fleet. So it's kind of weird.
Somebody got a discount bulk buy, you know.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, you're trying to control all of those at the same time. Come on, man. I don't know. But yeah, so I guess that's spooky news.
All right.
Moving right into Creepy Ketchup. So let's go ahead and do that here.
Creepy Ketchup. Creepy Ketchup. Creepy Ketchup. Creepy Ketchup. Y'all, it's creepy.
So, I have some Creepy Ketchup, finally. Finally.
I don't have any.
I know. I figured as much that if I had some, it transferred over to me. So, I had two things happen at the same time. So, I wake up. And I'm floating. So, astral projection.
Okay.
Classic astral projection. This actually happened 2-3 nights in a row.
Do you see yourself?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I felt myself float up out of my body, and I was able to turn around and look down at myself. You know, I was able to kind of move around the room a little bit and things like that and see my wife and stuff like that. So that was interesting. That's never... that I can recall. I don't remember that happening very often, if ever. But yeah, just floating there, it was the weirdest sensation, and I was frightened. Like, I was really, really scared about it. I don't know why. Like, my first instinct is not to go, oh, let's go fly to Disney World, you know, like, or whatever.
Yeah, let's see what my house looks like.
Yeah, no, I'm like, oh, God, I'm afraid of heights. And so anyways, the third night when I came up, like, so the third night was a combination of the astral projection and sleep paralysis because I couldn't move. I woke up, I couldn't move.
So you're projecting but static.
Yeah. And so, I project it. So I woke up the way you normally do, but then I projected out. And I could see my body shaking like it was trying to move, like I could watch it. I saw it happening, and then I saw the black creatures around me the further and further I got up, and then they all turned and looked at me, and it's that classic black face, just red eyes.
Yeah.
And then I heard this like chittering, I guess is the best way, like that's the best way I can describe it, and it scared me, and I went whoop, and like just fell back into my body and woke up the next morning.
That's crazy.
Like
That is some crazy stuff,
yeah,
man.
And so it happened three nights in a row, the astral projection, and this was coupled. So it hasn't happened in a couple days. So I think it was right around Christmas. But the third night was that I saw the night hags, and that I heard a noise. I don't ever recall hearing a noise, and I heard this chittering from. There was four of them, and I could hear them chittering.
Wow.
And they were standing around me as they usually do.
Yeah.
And yeah, so super creeped out. Very, very creeped out by that.
That is, well, you know, I've got some theories on where all that stuff is. We're going to get into a couple of those theories when we talk about the Hellier stuff, but but it'll be interesting to hear.
It was. Well, let's go ahead and move right into our topic, man.
Topic of the night.
So, yeah, we're going to be talking about Hellier, and check this out. Let's get some basic info.
Yeah, so first I think we need to say that if you haven't seen Hellier and you're listening to this episode, you might want to pause, go binge Hellier, and then come back.
Yeah, absolutely. Spoiler alert for sure. Yeah. There, if we didn't spoil it, the show would be 10 minutes.
Yeah,
Because there's too much just good stuff to talk about. But it's absolutely amazing. It's on Amazon Prime. It's also on YouTube. Just Hellier. Check it out. Let me get some basic info here.
Yeah, so the first season is like 5 episodes, and then the second season is, I want to say,
10. I think 10
or 11. Yeah, and really it. When you really watch all of it all the way through, you realize that the second season is really just a continuation of the first season. It's almost like they said we got to get something out there, so they put out five episodes.
Yeah. Then they were like, so much happened as soon as we finished up.
Right. So.
This comes from Planet Weird. This is Greg and Dana Newkirk. They both run Planet Weird, which we follow on Twitter. Love all of their news and just cool stuff that they put out there. But the plot summary here on IMDb, I'll read for you guys, says a small crew of paranormal researchers find themselves in a dying coal town where a series of strange coincidences lead them to a decades-old mystery with far-reaching implications, and that simply describes the first season.
Yeah.
It's directed by Carl Pfeiffer, who's super cool. I mean, and he's in this as well. That's the cool thing is when I first started hearing about it, I was not excited about it because, you know, small time ghost hunting docs are pretty bad. A lot of times they're just trying to emulate ghost hunters or trying to emulate ghost adventurers. And, oh, we got our energy drinks. Let's go bust some ghosts. But I kept hearing different things when we were researching the Kentucky Goblins episode. We even brought it up and talked about it, but I hadn't seen it really yet at that point. But I got very, very interested in the Kentucky Goblins, which is tied very heavily to this.
In fact, I would say the first episode, they spent probably 15 or 20 minutes talking about the relationship between this event in Hellier as well as the Kentucky Goblins that happened in Kelly, Kentucky.
Right, and then once we get done, we'll talk about some of the theories we kind of connected during our Claude Beast episode. But this stars Greg and Dana, we talked about. They also do the traveling, I wish I could remember offhand.
Paranormal Museum.
Yeah, sorry guys, I didn't mean to do that. They also do that. They're actually just up in Cincinnati, so they're only an hour and a half away from us. So if you guys are listening, we would love to talk to you guys, or at least just hang out and get some coffee. We're only an hour and a half away. I'm just so in love with you guys.
Just spitball ideas.
But you also got Connor Randall. Connor is so cool. Like, I love Connor. He's, like, so down to earth.
Yep.
Tyler Strand, Crazy Boy McGee. And Tyler didn't show up till the second season. Well, the end of the first season via phone call. And then a bunch of other people that show up as guests and things like that. But this just opened my brain.
Yeah. It really caused me to really think hard about a lot of things that I've been contemplating over the last year.
Well, especially you being the more seasoned skeptic of the two of us.
Yeah.
You were even like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, like,
well, and you know, I don't want to sound too much fanboy here, but the Greg's one of the things he talks about, I think it's in season 2, is his journey from kind of being raised in a very strict Baptist type upbringing, and then how his journey to expand his mind is, you know, over the last 20 years. And that's something I think you and I can resonate with.
Absolutely.
Because we had a similar, me probably more so than you, but
yeah, mine was a Catholic upbringing. Yeah. I mean, I went to Catholic school, right. Everything. Fear God, for sure.
So, I mean, you know, it's not only breaking that, for lack of a better word, kind of brainwashing that you get at those institutions, but it's also expanding your third eye, if you will, as to what the possibilities are.
Well, and if I could sum up this show in one word, it would be synchronicity. They talk about synchronicity from episode one to the end, and it is something that I have talked about for a very, very long time with my good friend Santosh, who is also obsessed with this, and he wanted to be here, but he couldn't. His car, oddly enough, broke down and couldn't get here. And so he's not able to be here. But we talk about that a lot, just some of the similar things that happened to us when we went to this university in Campbellsville. We felt a lot of the stuff that they're going through, like I was talking to him and I was like, God, David, this reminds me of the stuff that we believed was happening in Campbellsville.
Yeah.
We had very much, but we used to joke and call it the Hellmouth because Buffy was popular at the time, but we legit felt like there was something there, that something was happening and no one was seeing it because of all the Christian eyes that were on it. No one wanted to see it. But us in this small group of, I mean, like, let me tell you, I don't think I've ever even shared this story on here before, but just to share the weird things happening in Kentucky, right? So when we were going through all this and just being freaked out by things, finding synchronicities at Campbellsville through documents and things like that, we went driving. This is all by Green River Lake. And we drove out to Green River Lake because Santosh said, hey, I'm going to be out there. Something's up. I'm scared, blah, 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 blah. You're going to need to pick me up. I'm here, but I'm going to walk over to the park area where we always hung out. And it was like a half hour drive from the university. Yeah. And so my friend and I, who I won't name because I don't know if she wants me to, but we went driving and all of a sudden we just see, it's nighttime, right? We see darkness in the road. But it's a different type of darkness because we're driving in darkness, right?
Yeah.
It's a different color. And as we get up, we start to see that it's blood. Like there's just blood everywhere. It looks like, and there's just pieces of deer everywhere. I mean, in the trees, hanging in the trees, all along the rails. I mean, it just looks like four or five deer just exploded and just went out in all directions, and we scream, and we're like, we're running over everything, and we're freaking out. We're like, oh my God. I mean, it's on both sides of the road. We go, and we get David, and David says, I can't remember because it's been almost 20 years now, but Santosh David says something along the lines of, oh my God, we're being, you know, we've gotten too close, you know, there's this whole thing, blah, 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 blah. I felt this thing that we've got to be wary that there's death. Somewhere there's death. And we're like, oh my God. And we're telling him what happened. Yeah. And as we're driving back, we never saw it. We drove. It's a main stretch of highway. Yeah. It wasn't like it was a side road.
One way in, one way
out. We were gone for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
After that, nothing. There was absolutely nothing. And we turned around and went back again because we were like, I don't know how, because we didn't do over anything. But yeah, that happened. And there were big, what they call monkey cats sightings, which is what I tied to these goblins, because everything they talked about with these goblins reminded me of what the locals that we had become friends with had called monkey cats in that same area. We've got a family of friends that we went over to their house and they've got six daughters. And they were all crying. They all had stories of this monkey cat that would jump on their car, and it was small, and they just didn't know what to call it, and everyone in the area called it a monkey cat. And I'm like, this might be that.
What color was it?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's one of those things that you think to ask.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, remember that monkey cat? Remember what color it was?
But yeah, I mean, they definitely stressed that it was not a Yeti because it was too small.
Right.
But even in that area, we found Yeti sightings in, I used to, my friend, who I'm not going to say, worked in a library, and I used to go down to the archives all the time, and I would go through all these old news articles, and I found two news articles from 1898 that had two separate Yeti sightings at the opposite ends of the year. In Green River Lake.
Wow.
And just different stuff like that. And so watching this show, Santosh and I both were like, very reminiscent.
Yeah.
You know, but we were so young. There was, you know, internet wasn't what it is and stuff like that. And then go figure, here's the other synchronicity. That library friend of mine, that friend that lives in Somerset now, and second season is all about Somerset. Yeah. And like, and I am trying so hard to get her to watch it, but she's just busy. I mean, she doesn't have time, but I'm like, oh, she's a reference librarian. I'm like, y'all should have like interviewed her. She knows everything backwards and forwards about Somerset. And I'm just like, man. And her house was so haunted, man. A lot of my stories that I've shared on here came from her house. And it's just synchronicity, man. Like, again, that's what I'm saying. Like, and synchronicity really went into deep mode into the second season.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
But the first season, I mean, let's not get a little too off topic.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I do.
I'm sure we could talk a lot about your experience.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of the stuff I've shared about Campbellsville didn't tie into the, I'm going to air quote here, hellier experience that we went through.
Well, that you know of.
Yeah, that I know of. I don't know if some of the other things
how
are
deep the rabbit hole goes.
You know, Santosh swears that he saw like a troll or something underneath one of the bridges outside of campus. You know, it was green and small, had big ears. He even had a night hag that was similar to, and this is when he was freaking out. It's like, there's even a night hag that had jumped on the end of his bed that had the pointy ear. I mean, it's just like there's, but right now it's hitting me. I'm like, oh my God, synchronicity.
Right. So for those who have watched Hellier season 1 and 2, you'll know that the kind of description of the goblins that take place at Kentucky, as well as the goblins that are, you know, that kind of kick everything off in Hellier, are just kind of those little grayish or what actually they, I think, associated with the grays from an alien race. And so one of the things that they talk about quite a bit is ultra-terrestrials as opposed to extraterrestrials.
I was hoping you were going to bring that up because I did a deep dive into ultra-terrestrials. Explain that.
So best I can, and I have not done a deep dive into ultra-terrestrials, so I'm going to speak off what I think it is, and you can tell me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think ultra-terrestrials basically, so extra meaning coming from outside of the Earth, ultra meaning some advanced race coming from inside of the Earth.
I think so, yeah.
So, still more advanced than humans, let's say, but coming either from inside of the Earth or from the Earth, so maybe via a dimensional rift or...
Or the Hollow Earth theory.
Or the Hollow Earth theory, you know, so... but still just... So that every experience that anybody has ever had, thinking that it might be an extraterrestrial, it might actually be an ultra-terrestrial.
Right, and I've definitely heard that the alien sightings may be ultra-terrestrials, and yet the UFO sightings that we see are pretty much just the government. Hmm. Like, that's something that I've run across when researching, is that's just all government, you know, stuff. Even Keith was talking about, find it funny that everybody was seeing triangle-shaped UFOs, and then the stealth bomber shows up, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I get it. And so, but yeah, the sightings themselves, cryptids and things like that, fit more into this ultra-terrestrial theory, this ideology, you know? And I'm down.
I mean, it, you know, when you think about it, I was thinking about it today, actually. You know, we have, and I think I've mentioned it on our show before, we as a people, as the human race, we have... grown our front brain, and we have forgotten about our rear brain. So there's the concept that...
Call it the ass brain.
Well, no, I mean, there's a concept that, like, the rear brain is what controls your kind of your animal instinct type situation. So, you know, fight or flight, or when you, you know, get that spine tingling feel or the hair on your neck raises up, all of that comes from your rear brain. Whereas your ability to conceptualize things and to logically to break things down, all that stuff comes from your front brain.
Right.
Well, as we've grown as a people over the last, you know, a few hundred years, and our front brains have continued to advance, we've kind of forgotten about or we push down what happens in our rear brain. And so it makes me wonder if, like, there's an opportunity to do some type of experiment where you go on a ghost hunt and you somehow turn off your front brain and you tap into that rear brain to
see. Makes you wonder if that's what the God helmet does.
in a way.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe it does.
Who knows? I've
never gotten to experience it, so I don't know what it
I know,
feels
I really.
Like.
I'll tell you what, two things that really struck me that really made me very interested in, and I'm super jealous of Greg and Dana and them, is the God Helmet idea and then the Estes method. Because I looked into a kit and it's not cheap.
Yeah.
And that is something, as you know, as someone, especially, I loved when Dana did it. You know, I'm paganist too, so I resonate with Dana a lot. I'm pagan as well as I have psychic gifts and things like that. And I'm very interested in seeing what that would be like for me.
Yeah.
On terms of how I feel things through the Estes method, as well as the different things that they did. But then to see how you do it too, with having the photographic memory, like, yeah. Are you able to pick things quicker than me? Because my short term goes quick sometimes, and I'm like, I forgot because I hear something else, right?
Right.
And so wonder how that stores in your brain. I would be very interested down the road for us to somehow get that.
Somehow. It should be like a paranormal rental facility where you can rent tools for the paranormal.
Yes, just for a weekend. I would totally do that.
Business idea.
Yeah. copyrighted, trademarked by Fearscape Media. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And that Estes method is what took Connor out of being a sound guy into being a central character.
Yeah.
Right? And I say character just in the sense I'm a theater person. Right. I see the overall story. I mean, and that's what Carl's doing anyways. He's putting together a story. Right. God, I wonder how much. I love when he's like, you know what? I found this tape later on.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so that first season, I mean, essentially it's just Greg and Dana. Essentially, for the most part,
So Carl, I think Carl comes in like episode 2. Connor comes into the picture at the end of episode 2 in the first season, and they're kind of in there off and on, but first season, you're right, is mostly Dana and Greg, and kind of how it's really laying the groundwork.
Yeah.
In my opinion, like, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. In my opinion, season 1 is like a prequel to season 2.
I would absolutely agree with that. But it's what sets everything up, thus the word prequel. But it's like, so the emails that come in. So first of all, you get this email from, what's his name?
David Christie,
yes. I can't see. I hate that you can remember that stuff. David Christie. And then, of course, we get this stuff from Terry Rist.
Right.
Right, Terry R. Rist, terrorist, ha ha ha. Which they're able to find out he's in one of Alan Greenfield's books.
Right.
Right. Which, man, there's a Reddit subreddit that's out there where someone put together every single book mentioned. And I will tell you, a number of them are free on Kindle Unlimited. And so I've already downloaded a couple and bought a few. Very, very interested in every single book that they talked about. But yeah, so we get this email from this guy named David Christie, who's basically saying he's got Kentucky goblins in his backyard.
Right.
That they're messing with him and they're coming out of the mines or the caves.
The first email is almost like an enticement. You know, it's like, hey, you know, I was given your name by a mutual friend, Terry Rist. You know, Greg is thrown off because they only ever did ghost investigations.
Yeah, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but they weren't anybody at the point. Like, and this guy who's in the back of a book mentioned them. I get it too. I would be like, why did you pick
right.
me? You know, why aren't you hitting George Norrie? You know,
right. So, you know, so they get this, you know, kind of first little teaser email saying, hey, all this stuff's going on. And Greg decides, you know, hey, we'll see where this goes. You know, he replies back with, you know, would love to help you. Do you have any more information? And then, boom, it's like David comes back with this 3-page explanation of everything, of these, what do you call them, hairless, his daughter called them hairless children.
Yeah. Oh, gross, yeah.
With these little creatures that are coming out and playing in his yard and terrorizing his family and tapping on his daughter's window at night. And I mean, it's just to hear the, I guess, like the dramatical reading of the email with some of the pictures that they throw up on the screen is a little unsettling when you watch the show.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, you know, they start to do some research into, they discover the Kentucky Goblins and things like that, and then where Hellier sits, and we're time jumping all over the place, don't expect that. But one thing I loved was when they talked about the Mammoth Cave system. It's the largest cave system in the world.
Yep.
And looking at a map of what we just know right now, it's all already incredibly connected, yep. And it runs all through Kentucky. And it's
all the
very,
way through the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, all the way through the Appalachian Trail. And it's like, it's a system that can be traveled.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, somebody, maybe it was Santosh, said to me, he was like, well, you know, so many are underwater. I'm like, we don't know that they can't breathe, which brings me back to the clawed beast of the Ohio. What if they are amphibian? We have no idea. Like, if we're going on the ultra-terrestrial idea, what if they are amphibians of some sort, you know, and...
But then you got the the one we did on the Claw of Beast of the Ohio. If you remember, there was three events that took place in 1955, mm-hmm. all within pretty close proximity to each other. There's the Loveland Frog that took place in Cincinnati, mm-hmm. or just outside of Cincinnati. There's the Claw of Beast of the Ohio, mm-hmm. and then
the Kentucky Goblins
was in Evansville in Indiana, and then the Kentucky Goblins, which took place in Kelly, Kentucky.
Yeah, which we did a thing. It was like 75 miles south, directly
south.
A straight line.
But I mean, you know, it's the Ohio connects through to the river
into the cave system,
and everything. And if you remember when we talked about the Claw of Beast of the Ohio. The victim had some mud on mm-hmm. her leg that was only found in under river cave systems.
Yeah, in underground river cave systems, for sure.
So, yeah.
It's all connected, man. It's all absolutely connected. But anyways, they head out to Hellier to go investigate this because they can't get in touch with David anymore. He's just kind of...
Right. Disappeared.
Disappeared off the map.
For a lack of a better term, he ghosted them.
Yeah. Exactly. He ghosted them, which, you know, Greg's like, you know, probably like, oh, well, I can handle this. Yeah. Ghost. But they decide, you know, because they met Carl and Connor and those guys somewhere at a con or something like that and became a friend. And I think Carl thought it'd be a good idea. Hey, let's film. So they started kind of filming and doing some stuff and ended up going to Hellier, which I've been in Hellier. I've actually been to the gas station they've been to multiple times. My friend lived out in Hueysville and I've been out to Pikeville a million times when I worked with Kentucky Shakespeare doing tours out there. And I've been to that gas station,
that gas station.
I'm already picking it up. Like being to that gas station. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's like, I've been out there. So I was already synchronicity again. Yeah. I'm like, I know that gas station.
Well, you know what? You know, what's really, it's both, funny and sad is that probably because of where this is happening, the rural part of Kentucky, mm-hmm. that any story is probably immediately discounted as being, you know, and I do not feel this way, but just dumb country people.
You would be surprised, though. Like, yes, because there's a lot of, like, deep Christian roots in there that immediately say, you know, no, no, no. But then there's this old-timey folk...
Yeah,
people that exist too that are very much like, we've seen things y'all can't even imagine.
Well, I mean, if you think back to the episode we did on Native American creatures, one of the things we talked about was like their version of the Fae being up in the Appalachian Mountains.
Yes.
And so when you go back to even hundreds of years ago, the folklore of the area, there were these creatures that lived in the mountains.
Yes.
So...
And there are, I mean, like, and then you'll meet a lot of country folk, especially mountain folk, that'll tell you things that they've seen lights and just, and cry and tell you these stories of creatures they've seen. And it's, when do we start believing these people?
Right.
You know, like,
that's what I'm saying. That's the sad part, is that because of where it is and because people automatically discount it's just, you know, a country bumpkin, that you know, their story doesn't hold water.
I've always wondered, though, it's like, who is the one that's considered okay? Because it's like, oh, you're a country bumpkin. Oh, you're a poor city kid. Oh, you're a rich guy, so you're just, you know, crazy, right? Who? There is no... And then we even have the Navy come out saying, and they're like, I don't know.
The government lies to us all the time. They're probably lying about this.
So there is no... person that you're like, well, I'd believe them.
Well, actually, so I think what it probably boils down to is that people's unwillingness to believe is their fear, right?
Yes.
Because to accept it, that something like that is possible just brings into question all kinds of other things about your own kind of what you believe and your own experiences and all that kind of stuff. And it really starts to make you question yourself. And for a lot of people, that's too much.
Yep. But they get to, and I was sad that this was never figured out in season two, but they try to find David Christie and not a soul knows who he is. Not a soul.
So they did find something in season two.
Yeah, a little bit, but still not.
No.
Not enough for me, because small towns, they know everybody.
Well, they, I don't know. So they found the house, and it burned down.
Yeah.
It used to belong to an individual named David M. Pearsons.
Yes, Parsons.
Parsons, excuse me. And so that was a close match to David M. Christie.
Right. But they didn't know if he was a doctor or not.
Right.
You know, but I mean, all that relies on the information that he sent, too. I mean, that's the thing. It's like there's so much secrecy because you don't want to be outed.
Well, see, I think a lot of times people, I wondered about the whole saying that he was a doctor. To me, that is to give credibility.
Sure.
So, you know, if I send you an email and say I'm an unemployed actor, then maybe I don't have the same credibility as if I say I'm a doctor. Right?
Sure. Absolutely. That is definitely an old school thing to do.
So it's he may not have even been a doctor. He may have just included that to make his story
maybe he was a Time Lord
more credible.
He was the doctor. But regardless, just first season alone, they get to Hellier and no one knows who that is. I mean, they didn't know where it was. You know, they had an idea of a house that they thought it was because it kind of fit the description. Right. And luckily, you know, Carl had, you know, some extra video so they were able to find it in season two. But, yeah, I mean, it was just an empty house. And yeah, but I mean, that was my thing. It's like I feel like in a small town people would know.
People would know.
And granted, he wasn't there that long, but still, I mean.
But, I mean, it also could have been owned by someone who wasn't David M. Christie.
Correct.
And rented to this person who was the doctor.
Very true. Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
A lot of people don't know renters. They know owners.
But they discovered how scary that Eastern Kentucky can be by being out there. Because even the people they were meeting were like, oh, yeah, let me tell you stories. And they do. Like I said, mountain folk out there and the people Pikeville and all that area out there, they all have stories of things that they have seen, you know, when they're out because they're in the country.
Since watching that, I haven't had an opportunity, but my grandmother grew up in Monticello.
Yeah,
but Monticello, Kentucky, which the house that she lived in was next to a cave entrance.
Interesting. So that's not far from Somerset.
Wondered if they ever saw anything questionable.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, that whole area is rife with stuff. But yeah, they get there and nobody's really helpful, and I think they had more interesting thing happen at the place they stayed.
Yeah, right?
You know,
this was this was still first season, right?
They're staying at that cabin. Yeah, that cabin, and you've got Connor on the Estes machine, and all the while something's in the bushes,
right?
You know,
something's just outside of view.
Right. And it's like, yes, I know, skeptics. I know it could be a raccoon. I know it could be a squirrel. I know it could be a Kentucky wildcat. I know it could be a bunch of things. But what if it was something else?
Right.
Right.
I mean, just because it can be all those things doesn't mean it can't be what we're talking about.
Yeah. You know, and then the big synchronicity thing, the tin can.
Yeah.
You know, when Connor sees this tin can in his mind and he can't shake it.
Right.
It's just a used tin can, and it's a very particular type of tin can.
Well, he kept saying, when he was doing the Estes session, he kept saying, Carl knows this, and Carl knows the way. Mm-hmm. And they immediately thought he was talking about Carl, the director guy.
Yeah.
But actually, later on, it's found out that as part of the Ingrid Cold, that there was a connection there for a Carl and a Connor.
Yes.
And so in both cases of the Estes method, you hear Carl and you hear Connor.
Connor.
And you assume they're talking about those people, but it's actually related to Ingrid Cold.
Let me tell you, Ingrid Cold, okay? I am obsessed with Ingrid Cold now because of this. Like, and I forgot how much the Mothman Prophecies movie really tied the two together.
Yeah.
The Mothman and Ingrid Cold. And I knew I had heard that name before. But I've been reading a lot of stuff up on Ingrid Cold, and we will be covering Ingrid Cold for sure. But it's just very interesting, all that. And then, you know, I don't remember how they got to that cave where they find the tin can, because it's been so long.
So it was an old railroad tunnel. Right. They had asked around if there was any place they could go to get into the cave system.
Oh, that's right.
They were
that's
directed
right.
to that railroad tunnel. And so then, and then from that railroad tunnel that was supposed to connect into a bunch of different cave systems from there, because it was like a 2-mile-long railroad tunnel.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of old, you know, not only do you have caves, but you do, you've got these mines, and a lot of them connect.
Right.
Right? And there are a lot of old towns. When I went out there visiting my friend that lived in Hueysville, he's like, let's go take a ride. I'll go show you something cool. And he's taking me on this mountain road in the Appalachians. I mean, there's no rail. I mean,
You're freaking out?
I'm freaking out. I mean, you can tell he's been driving this since he was a kid.
Right.
He takes me. It's about 45 minutes deep into the mountains. And then all of a sudden, he's like, wait for it, wait for it, wait for it. Boom, city. Hmm. In this valley. It's just this small, wooded valley. And everything's just overgrown. And we get in there, and it's just this old mining town that was there, he said, was there for 10 years only in the 50s.
Wow.
And then it dried up, and so they left. Everyone moved. I mean, there's just empty houses. Yeah. There's a school. There's an old general store. And most people don't even know it's there. There's, like, not very many of the windows are broken. I mean, it looks like a snapshot out of history. But with just trees and vines grown up over everything. And he's like, yeah, we used to play here when I was a kid. We used to take our mopeds up here, you know? And, like, I'm just like, what else is there? And he's like, yeah, the mine entrance is over there. You know? Yeah. It's like,
it's funny that I was talking to somebody about, so when Taylor, this is a little off topic, but when Taylorsville Lake in Kentucky was originally formed, there used to be a road that ran through a tunnel that went across the river that was Taylorsville before it was a lake. And when they decided to build the dam and dam it up, they didn't tear any of that stuff down.
Yeah, no, there's so many cities.
They just let the water fill up over top of the houses and stuff that were left. And he said that when it first filled up, the water was so clear that you could go on a boat and look down through the water and see houses and barns and sheds and everything.
I've heard that with all the, because there isn't a natural lake in Kentucky. They're all man-made, and I've heard stories about that from all of them. There's churches down there. It's not just Kentucky. They're like Missouri does it and things like that. Whole towns just underneath there, and so, you know, divers go down there and stuff. It's cool.
Well, you know, so our talk about when people die, they get stuck wherever they died, maybe. And so at the bottom of lakes, there are ghosts walking
around.
Like it's nothing.
Like it's nothing. It's crazy. But yeah, so they don't find anything, but they do. They do Connor finds this tin can in there that looks precisely exactly
like the one he saw in his head.
Like the one he saw in his head. Absolutely. And so there's, you know, kind of a freak out session.
Right.
And, like, Connor definitely freaks out. I think he was a pretty decent skeptic before all this happened.
You know, everybody's a skeptic until they have that kind of one event that really says, well, yeah, but, you know, look at all this kind of evidence and stuff. And, you know, for me, that was when we did the Bardstown, you know, I was a skeptic up until, man, that was just a crazy thing. And so from there, I've kind of had my eye open, if you will, looking at
your
things.
Your third eye open. I think I've made that joke already. But yeah, so second season gets even deeper. I mean, they end up meeting Alan Greenfield and asking him, hey, is Terry Wrist a real guy? Because there are people saying it was actually just Alan Greenfield.
Right.
But they found, like, Alan Greenfield's like, yeah, come talk to me. Right. I mean, season two was insane. They got to meet so many cool people. But he's like, no, Terry Wrist will find you when he's ready. Yes, he plays these games. You know, that he was this codebreaker type guy, Vietnam vet, that just eats this up.
Yep. So I know they did the thing with the numbers where they had a 16-digit number on a card, 16-digit, and they put that into, like a standard kind of number cipher, and they came up with like 93, 93, 39, 90, so on and so forth. But in Terry Wrist's email, that he also misspelled a couple of words.
Mm-hmm.
He separated things out, and I took those letters and I plugged them into a general alphabet cipher. Mm-hmm. So 1 equals A, 2 equals B, so on and so forth. And figured it up, and it equates out to a phone number. Now, I sent that to Greg. I don't know if they're going to do anything with it.
Right.
I don't want to just randomly call somebody and say, hey, are you Terry Wrist? You know, but it would be interesting to know if it was just something, you know, kind of simple like that. Just because they proved one thing doesn't mean that it may not be other things to solve for.
Yeah. Did you do a reverse phone number lookup?
I did. Well, I did.
I mean, Terry Rose ain't going to let his number be out there.
It's a cellular number. That's all I know. Hmm. Area code's based in Southern California, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's where the person is.
Right, right. Well, I mean, they said that they thought that's where Terry might be, was in California, if you'll remember.
Yeah,
so. Boop. But yeah, so it was cool meeting Alan Greenfield. Just opened the floodgates.
Oh yeah, it was just that whole. I mean, if you pay attention to the clock, that's kind of flashing behind.
Yeah,
them.
They were there for.
They were there for like 6 hours.
I'm super jealous. I want all that footage. I want all of
it. Yeah, all the unedited footage, please.
So I want that book, but it's a hard one to track down as
oh,
well.
Oh yeah, I think I found a copy. You talking about the Euphonaut?
Yeah.
I think I found a copy. It's like $193.
Yeah.
It's
like, so yeah, Greg, if you want to go ahead and make some copies and send that to fearscapepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you. But yeah, second season was just crazy, man. Like it was so good.
Yeah.
And getting into the Indrid Cold stuff and just getting into just all of the different theories, getting into Aleister Crowley, who we covered last year, and David. It's funny because my friend Santosh David, it was reading an Aleister Crowley book when he was watching Hellier. And so he runs to the book and was like, oh, my God, oh, my God. And all the numerology and just number ideas. And that's all stuff that I've been a part of and done and touched. And it's just crazy, man.
Well, you know, they talk about in the first season and the second season, they talk a lot about the Third Order.
Yeah.
And the Third Order being a part of the and now this I'm going to blank on. But it's some like golden society or something.
Golden
like
Dawn.
Golden Dawn. There you go. And there's three orders.
Yep.
And the Third Order being kind of the highest level and all this kind of stuff. But I was also thinking about when we did our podcast when we did the interview with Steven Stanek, and he was talking about the djinn.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some research on the djinn. And if you remember, one of the items that I found in the research is that in the Arabic, there's three races.
Yes.
There's the angels,
yep,
the djinn, and humans.
Yep.
And so you could almost say that the humans are the third order. The djinn exist outside in a southern in another plane, and the angels exist outside another plane. And so maybe the humans' MIA is we're not living up to our part of the bargain.
Mm-hmm. Wow, interesting. Yeah, Golden Dawn is very, very interesting. It in itself was really, really cool, but even Crowley was like, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to do my own thing. But yeah, I mean, a lot of that influenced a lot of Gerald Gardner stuff into modern paganism and stuff like that. But yeah, so it was cool. So you got Santosh reading that stuff, his synchronicity. Yeah. I mean, he's messaging me on Facebook every episode. He's just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. This is how it connects to me. This is how it connects to us. This is like already.
Yeah.
I'm just blown away. And I guess because we're in Kentucky, we're extra close to it. You know, because we're here. We exist in this nebula of Kentucky goblins, right? And everybody, like, I've been asking people, and everybody's got a story. Like, everybody's got a story.
Well, we were talking to our friend a few months back, and he made the statement of, is it just me, or does it seem like Kentucky has more stuff going on than any other state?
Yeah, and I used to say, oh, no, that's,
you
know, that's just because we're here.
Right.
But, no.
Maybe.
I don't think so. I mean, it's just, I find more stuff on Kentucky than anything, man. It's crazy, man. But what else have we got in season two? So Somerset, all of Somerset.
Oh, Somerset is just the stuff that they talk about there, and there seems to be some type of like shadow leadership.
Yeah, some sort of secret. Yeah. And so that's why I was not cracking up, but just like blown away. I'm like, God, now he's hitting secret conspiracy theories and government, shadow governments and things like that. And I believe that. I've heard tale, not in Somerset, but just in these small towns, they're like, you don't mess with so-and-so, they're actually who's in charge.
Well, and you just, I mean, a lot of times in small towns, I think just in general, you kind of have the hierarchy of who you don't mess with, right?
Right.
And if you're an outsider, you're an outsider.
I mean, right.
Just, you don't get the same interaction as somebody who lives there. And so it was nice that they were able to find that guy that ran the museum local.
Yeah, which I've been wanting to go to for a while because the last time I went to Somerset, it wasn't there. So I'm very interested in going, and good for him. I'm sure he's getting some customers now. But yeah, I very much want to go. My friend that lives there said it's really cool, and I'm very, very pumped to get to Somerset, and it gives me an excuse to see her and go to the museum.
So road trip sometime.
Yeah, road trip in the summer. We can get a houseboat and go on Lake Cumberland. It would be great. There's also the Moonbow down there. If you've never seen the Moonbow, it's the only place in the world right now you can see the Moonbow because the part where it was in Lake Victoria in Africa dried up.
I saw a Moonbow at my house.
Not this. This is not a circular. This is an actual rainbow, and it's the only place in the world that you can see a rainbow created by the moon.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Because I saw a Moonbow in my backyard the other night.
Mm-hmm.
Like the full circle.
Yeah, full circle around the moon. Those are called something else. I don't remember what they're called. But this is not around the moon. It's the light from the moon creates a rainbow.
Oh.
It's really cool. And you can see it every full moon because it's the way that the mist and the water comes up. It's really cool.
Do you know that all rainbows are full circles?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of caught me off guard, but there's some stuff on like YouTube and things where people take video and stuff of rainbows when they're in an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a full circle
all the way around. And that's why I've always found it funny that, you know, leprechauns say, you know, that the gold is at the end of the rainbow because there is no end.
There's no end to the rainbow.
You're just
right.
constantly walking around it. Blah, blah, blah. It's literally a Mario Kart track.
You can't fall off the edge.
Though. Yeah, you can't fall off the edge. But yeah, season two, man, so good. Dana, and just the references to Pan, because that was already where I went as a pagan. I was immediately thinking Pan. And then when they brought up Pan, I was like, yes. Because Pan is already taken, you know.
So if you remember when they did the Estus experience at the cave in Hellier first season in the railroad tunnel, they talked to somebody there in the tunnel, and they all said, I get the feeling like there's something there and it's sleeping, and it's not ready to wake up yet.
Right.
So then you go to episode two, and they do the ritual in the cave to try to call Pan, and they say some you know, they don't really get the response that they were necessarily looking for. The last episode of season two, they're sitting there on the couch with E.L. Tenney sitting there with them, and they said, you know, they're talking about this ritual that's to call Pan, and Connor says the only god, or actually it may have been Greg, the only god who ever died. And EL says, or who is sleeping.
Right.
So maybe Pan is in Hellier.
Yeah. Well, and that's something that I thought about. When they did the ritual and all that stuff, I'm like, they're in the wrong spot. Why aren't they doing this in the train cave?
Yeah.
Like, that was one thing that I absolutely thought, because that's where the tin can was.
Yeah.
That's where we got a lot of information.
They were being told to go to that place. The thing was sleeping. It wasn't ready to wake up yet.
Right.
That's where they should be
and
doing it.
And what, think about this. You know, the three notes, right? Bomb, bomb, or I don't remember.
Bing, bing, bing.
Yeah, bing, bing, bing. Three notes. You think about a train horn, it's multiple notes blaring at the same time.
Right.
It's a train tunnel.
Yeah, it takes three is what the – it was bing, bing, bing.
Yeah.
It takes three. You know.
Yeah, and so here we are. I'm like, go to that tunnel.
Right.
Make it a train horn sound. See what happens. See what wakes up that way.
Yeah.
Because maybe that's how it used to wake, was through these trains that used to go through there, right? Like,
I mean, it's just, yeah, so maybe we'll see all this stuff in season three. Maybe they're making the same connections we are.
Well, and even then, I will say this, I love Dane, I love being a pagan, I love what she did with the ritual. I would have done more. I would have absolutely done more, and maybe that's just my path. There was a lot more. I thought it was a little vanilla, and maybe it's because everyone was scared, and that's possible. I mean, you know, watching a show, you don't know all the ins and outs. But yeah, I feel like the ritual could also be a little deeper. It could be a little more, instead of just saying, you know, I call you spirits of East, literally invite the guardians of the watchtowers of the East, right? And mention them by name, you know, fairies and all of those different things like I do in Circle. I call out creatures that embody that as well and invite them all there and different gods and different things like that. I wonder if that makes a difference, especially these creatures that are a part of nature, which is Pan.
Right.
You know, like you get to West where it's water and the sylphs and mermaids and things like that, nature, fire, you've got your salamanders and different things like that. These are all things that Pan would be interested in.
Right.
And yeah, I think they just assumed the Pan flute was the way to go, but I think it might be a train horn. And yeah, I think I hope next season, I hope we see them go back to that train tunnel and do that again there. Because I am a big believer, sometimes it takes three. So maybe they need to do that two more times.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know. But I was ready to see some shit, man.
Well, I'm happy to be along for the ride. I mean, and I do think, and I think I've shared this with you a little bit, but I really feel like, and this is going to be a little out there, but I feel like that something's coming. Mm-hmm. There's something coming. And I feel like the governments of the world, they know about it, and they've put their plan in motion.
Well, it reminds me, I don't know if I guarantee you haven't, but have you ever heard of the Celestine Prophecy?
No.
It's a fictional book, but it's using fiction to tell what they believe is fact. And it's essentially something was coming, and it wasn't the end of the world. Like, they had kind of predicted around the 2012 type thing.
Yeah.
They thought that there was going to be a shift in energy, and, that people would become enlightened and things like that. Because David and I talked about that as well.
So, I mean, and that's when I feel like something's coming. The government has their approach, but this third order or whatever has a different, they want to take a different route.
Mm-hmm.
And in the age of social media and everything, they're using Greg and Dana and Connor and Carl and Jay.
Tyler.
They're using those guys as, for lack of a better word, prophets,
mm-hmm.
to help get the word out, to maybe lead people to enlightenment or to grow their minds so that when this event occurs, there won't be so much shock and awe or whatever the case
may be. I mean, if you look at this group of people, and I include Tyler in this, they are the perfect Scooby gang.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own strengths. And even as crazy as Tyler is, they need that. They need that person that's going to jump first.
Right.
Right. You know, and, you know, you've got Carl, who's essentially the skeptic. You know, you've got Connor, who is the soft spoken, you know, I'm going to call him a genius because he's super smart. Right. He's that, you know, Dana's the witch and Greg is kind of the Fred of the group. Right.
Yeah.
You know, you've got this kind of perfect balance that exists there. The only thing they need is me and you.
Yeah,
right? No. Just kidding. But yeah, they are a perfect group with strengths that really help each other. And man, I'm like, oh, I wonder what season one had been like had they had Tyler along the ride.
Yeah,
in the first one,
probably more cave exploration.
Right, but you know, and to play skeptic, you know, it's like if you've ever seen the movie The Number 13 or whatever that movie is. The Number 31, or it's got Jim Carrey, but nope. You start to see patterns and you start to see things, and I mean, it's that this thing I always used to say, it's like when our friend Justin got a Jeep, all of a sudden we saw Jeeps everywhere.
Yeah,
you know, it's that,
I mean, you do, you mean, but just because your eye is open doesn't mean it's not occurring.
Correct. And, you know, so like I said, I'm just gonna play skeptic for a second.
I mean, you didn't hallucinate those Jeeps; they were actually on the road.
Well, and even then, I mean, it's like, you know, with the balloons, like the blue balloon. One thing they never mentioned was that Ceres is a blue star.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like.
Well, and there's one thing that they said once. They said it one time or one time only, and then it was like for like 15 seconds. They said that good aliens come from Ceres and bad aliens come from Orion.
Yeah. I thought that was very interesting as well.
But it was like it was said once and then it was never mentioned or
never mentioned again.
Touched on again.
You know, and then, you know, you can only put so much stuff in.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you know. And then, we ain't even touched on old girl that sent her crazy emails and ended up in jail.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and then man.
They did a video call with her.
Yes. I was so thankful that we tracked her down because I was like, please don't tell me we're going to have more people not showing up.
Well, she did kind of disappear for a while, and it was
because she was in jail.
She got arrested, right? So,
but man, I know people like her, man. I mean, coming from that area, you know.
Well, and it's, you know, if you think about it, if there is kind of this shadow leadership, if you take somebody who already has a questionable past or questionable connections with mm-hmm. her brother and things, it makes it an easier story to sell and to discredit her with whomever she's reached out to.
Absolutely. Absa freaking lutely will I add with that, because yes, skeptics, I can do this, but yet there's a reason. If there is a third order, if there is some sort of something else that's pulling the strings, they're the ones giving you the tools for your skepticism.
Yep.
Right, there's a possibility of that. You know, I will never say 100% on anything because we just don't know, and I hope skeptics listen to our show. But that's my side. The non-skeptic side says, but yeah, something could be pulling those strings, that it is hiding that stuff from us. And, you know, you can say, oh, well, how come no one's come out? People have come out. Think about the technicians that came out about the Roswell incident. Nobody believed them, right? People that come out about Area 51, no one believed them. I mean, it's like, once again, when are we allowed to believe the people that come out?
Yep. Well, and it's
or even Bob Lazar. There's another one.
Well, I mean, it's just what it boils down to is, even if you did believe them, it would cause you to have to question what you believe in. Mm-hmm. And most people aren't ready for that yet. And so you take a show like Hellier, which maybe gets people to think about that kind of stuff. And so you have people like me and you who are already kind of open to that line of thinking.
Right.
And we maybe pull in people on the fringe of our relationships that are barely, you know, open to that kind of stuff. They watch Hellier. They start to open their minds, and so on and so forth and so on and forever. And we start to grow the movement, if you will.
Yeah. And that's what it's all about. Anytime something like this gets bigger, you hope that it expands everything.
Yep.
You know, like that's the thing. You hope that it gets out there more. And who knows? Maybe it's just big to us.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, they've been getting email after email, and I'm like, third season's going to be even more crazy because of all the connections they're meeting,
yep.
You know, and like, you know, and who knows what'll happen. I mean, just the emails, and, you know, even Greg was like, God, we get so many emails and so much of it's crap, but every once in a while,
right,
something comes through and we're like, whoa.
Like, I'm not going to lie, I'm some of those emails because
I've sent
some of my ideas and things like that, but... And I, you know, I don't send them to them in hopes that they'll like plug my podcast or
We're generally interested in figuring this out.
Yeah, I'm a problem solver. I want to help any way I can. So
I'm into paranormal CSI, baby. What do we need to do?
We need to dust for fingerprints.
Yeah, I mean, I like it because I'm impatient. It's like, I don't want to wait for season 3. Get me involved because I want to help figure it out now. I believe in this stuff and I am willing to put in work like that. And I think that's what so many of us are, these armchair paranormal detectives. We're all like, okay, hey, we've done our own research. Right. Maybe this will help, right? You
know, I'll sign an NDA until season 3 comes out.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just like, and I guess for us, because we're, you know, so close to where they are.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, we're just right here.
I mean, I'm 90 minutes or less away.
Yeah. I've already got a cool Airbnb that I've stayed at in Covington. We're good to go. And we can go get some Hofbrauhaus. So, but yeah, so, man, there's so much we could talk about Hellier. Yeah.
If you, I would say if you've watched it, go back and watch it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And watch it with someone.
You know, because there's probably even stuff you missed.
Yeah. And like I said, watch it with someone. Introduce people, because the more and more people that will watch this, the more and more we as a community can help Greg and Dana and Carl and all those guys figure this out.
Right.
You know, and be a part of their synchronicity.
Yep, exactly.
So I once again, I love this documentary. It is literally my favorite documentary ever, like in terms of paranormal.
Yep.
But Hellier is it's hit me in a place that connects me.
Yeah.
And somehow it makes me feel like I'm a part of this.
Yep.
And so watch Hellier. Like I said, Amazon Prime has it for free. Season 1
provided
and 2.
If you have
Amazon Prime. Yeah. YouTube, I believe you can find it there. You can follow Greg and Dana and those guys on Twitter. Planet Weird, I know you can follow.
Weird HQ, I think.
Yeah, WeirdHQ.com. Check out all of their stuff. All of their stuff. I even found some of Dana's old ghost hunting videos where it's her and these other women, and it's great. From back in the day, it's on Amazon as well. I can't remember the name of it offhand because I don't have your memory. But yeah, I have become a big fanboy of you guys, and I am so proud of what you guys have done being in the paranormal community ourselves. This is big, and this is awesome, and I can't wait to see what you do outside of Hellier.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very interested in following what everyone does. Carl, I want to see some more movies. What do you got? I want to see it all. What do you got? So, but yeah, you know, we want to start wrapping up.
Yep.
Because it's that time. But we've got our listener stories. So we were talking about how weird Kentucky is, right? And so we get so many stories that I find on Haunted Kentucky. So many freaking stories from people. And I've got a number of them. And you can send your story to us at fearscapepodcast@gmail.com or find us on Twitter or Instagram Facebook at fearscapepod. We're very, very interested in those. We want to hear your stories. And we definitely have had some people send us some stories. This one comes from Doris Smith Gallenstein. This is her story.
When I was 18, I was leaving my boyfriend's home late one night from Flemingsburg, Kentucky, when I saw a large old house burning. I sat in the middle of the road and watched it for like what seemed 5 minutes or so. I had really weird feelings about it. Like, what should I have done? You see, back in the early 80s, we didn't carry cell phones, so I just felt helpless. I went home and I told my brother-in-law, whom I was living with, my sister and him. He reassured me that I couldn't have done anything. So the very next day, I went back to Flemingsburg and looked at where the house was on fire the night before. But when I got there, there was no sign of anything burning, ever. What could this mean? I always thought about that. Why did I see this? And when did it actually happen?
Right? So was that a residual?
Residual burning?
Yeah, like that created such intense energy, the house itself.
Or did she pass into a parallel dimension?
Yeah, that's also possible. But I mean, we see ghost ships and things like that. Could we not see a ghost house?
I don't see why you couldn't.
Yeah. I don't know.
I guess if the energy is attached to the place.
And yeah, I mean, it's a whole different world back in the 80s. You couldn't just snap your picture and all that stuff. But yeah, thank you for letting us use that story. Keep sending them in. Even just quirky incidents just like that. That's what we want to hear. Something that's just unexplained.
Odd.
You know, and I'm thankful that your brother-in-law didn't say, oh, you have a wild imagination. But yeah, we're going to get out of here. But as usual, thank you guys so much for tuning in. You guys can always find us at fearscapepodcast.com. We're on Stitcher and Spotify and Apple Podcast. We are on everything.
Pretty much everything you might listen
to. Yes, we are on everything. So tell your friends, tell everybody, get them to listen to Fearscape Podcast. And on that, I guess we'll get out of here. So this has been Steph, and I will catch you on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight. Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.
I'm so glad you were able to join us for that horrifying discussion. I hope they didn't frighten you too much. Tune in next week for even more research into the nightmarish and haunting creeps and spooks that we tell ourselves don't exist, but we know they do. Make sure you have your blankets, that you hold them extra tight. Next time on Fearscape.